हरि
back for our next season. This is what, 82? So that means season 27. Okay. Now, when you're chanting these mantras, very important that it's not that you're just chanting them. So that's technically correct. But you're able to chant them together exactly the same. So that means you have to be aware of how everyone else is chanting. You can't just chant on your own. Does that make sense? If you're on your own, then you chant. But when you're together, then you're chanting as a group. Right? And as a group, it means however it's moving, that's how you move. And so how you tell is by who's leading the chanting. Right? Does that make sense? And the yagya, it'll be the ugata, and the class, it'll be the teacher. Right? You have to be able to do this. This is something that, if you're not careful, if there's less boys, okay, then one or two are off, they're new, generally, and so you won't notice, because the others will be louder and that. But as you're growing, then you have to be aware of these things. Otherwise, if you're not aware, then it won't be nice. If it doesn't sound nice, then people aren't attracted. People aren't attracted, then they're not absorbed in Krishna. Understand? So it's part of the preaching and all that. Okay, so then...
Sir?
Yes?
Can you just mention, because we're doing a new
yeah.
Can you just a little bit maybe mention the importance of knowing and understanding and hearing about the acharyas?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. In the study, in one of the more important subjects, of course, philosophy is always the main subject. Everything else is connected with that. But within all these other subjects, then it's considered very important, the Puranas. Because the Purana is history. History will mean the history of those personalities who are, you know, how they followed the Vedic culture, how they became Krishna conscious, or how they performed their life in Krishna consciousness. Right? That's what's important to learn from history. History is not just a bunch of facts. It's a matter of what's important is you have a lifestyle. So how did these other persons, how did they live it? And then what was the result of their living this lifestyle? Right? That's what history is for. So then within history, one of the subdivisions is then itihas. So itihas then will mean where there's a focus on a particular person. Right? And then going through their lifetime. Right? So then within that, then you have what's important there is then you see in detail, right, how someone is living. The Puranas will give important situations, so important pastimes that are there that you can learn the maximum from. But itihas means it gets more into detail right into the life. So then within that, then you have the pastimes of the acharyas. Right? It means you have the ancient history, where you're going back and all the great personalities, you know, coming down through history. Then you have the Acharyas. Right? The Acharyas, then we see how they are applying this philosophy and everything specifically for us, right? Because the all Acharyas, that means all great personalities are working in Krishna consciousness, so everybody can benefit. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out is that in conditioned consciousness, there's so many varieties of manifestations. So that means each person will basically be manifesting their own special mundaneness, right? But those who are on the transcendental platform, then there's a common point is that they're all God conscious. So they have the same understanding of Godhead, their relationship with Godhead, everything. Right? So that makes it very special. Now, then within that, then there's certain flavors. Right? The flavor of Vaikuntha, flavor of Dwarka, flavor of Vrindavan. So then, depending upon that, then that's where your specific acharyas, they bring out, how does somebody in that specific mood, how do they act? How do they respond? How do they deal? Does this make sense? So it's very relevant for our lives. We may say, well, that was a long time ago, it doesn't apply now. But that doesn't happen. When you're dealing with eternal, you don't get this problem. That's the great thing about eternal, is that it always works, right? The temporary, right? That is what is the problem. Because, as we said, each conditioned soul has its own unique spin on mundanity. So we can say, no, we need examples from now, but how people act now is so totally different than each other that it's not that there's a problem in time. Basically, what most others do don't apply to you anyway. Even if they're doing it in the same time, even in the same room. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? Okay. You're down at the pumps, right? And, you know, the basic, you could say, common element probably is just you're all on the same planet. Even that might be, let's say, same universe. That one you can't question. Yeah, you can't question that. So somebody is just washing their clothes, right? Somebody is putting on, you know, the, you know, daily entertainment system is running, you know, the, how you say, the...
Pump kata.
Huh?
Pump kata.
The pump kata, you know, what do you call it? The GBO, you know, the Gurukul, you know, whatever it is, like this. So something is going on like that, you know. So some are actually, you know, washing clothes. Some are, you know, doing something like that. Some are, you know, seeing if they can somehow or another skid from one end of the pumps all the way to the other without hitting anybody or hitting pumps like that. But most of the time they don't really worry about either of them, you know, as long as there's a good slide, then that's all that matters. So, now, why is that going on? Is it just regular variety? Or is it actually complete difference in consciousness? You understand? So, that's what we mean. So, one kid's just sliding around in the pumps. It doesn't apply to someone else. Like that. You understand? You know, so that's what we mean is that the mundane does not necessarily, even though it's happening at the same time, does not necessarily apply to you. Because it's a completely different consciousness. While transcendental, that always applies because it's eternal. And everyone from the spiritual world will have the same basic, foundational understanding. Like, we hear so many stories and instructions from Narad Muni, right? Now, do we feel the mood of it in the way of its relevance in Krishna consciousness is any different than if we're hearing from another great personality? No. Now, Sukadeva Goswami, he's from Vrindavan, right? And we hear what his instructions, but we don't see any difference in that instruction than that of Narad Muni. And Narad Muni's from Vaikuntha. And when Sukadeva is talking all this, we don't see any difference between this and when someone else from Vrindavan is speaking, even though he's in a different rasa. He's a parrot. Right? You understand my point? So therefore, you don't have this different. You don't have this problem. It's not even universal. You know, it's what it'd be cosmic, you know. How do you say cosmological or something? I don't know, whatever. Something, it's just, it fits anywhere. Does this make sense? We have to be very clear on this, because those who are affected very seriously by mundane logic, right, they will try to reverse this. Right? Krishna says in the Gita that people who are not God conscious, they will take irreligion to be religion, and religion to be irreligion. Right? So what is actually the truth, they'll say is false. And what is false, they'll say is truth. Right? Does that make sense? So they'll say the mundane has more meaning because it's happening right now, while the eternal doesn't. But eternal means it's always there. Right? Modern, you worry about time, place, and circumstance because you have past, you have present, and you have future. But eternal means it's always there. It always exists. So, does that make sense? So it's not. There's not a question of it not being applicable. Yes? What do you think? Yes? Okay, that's good. Thinking is going on. This is very good. Yes?
Just a comment that that's one of the reasons why in Sanskrit literature, there's always this word "atta" used at the beginning. "Atta" means now. So
"atta"
means applicable, eternally applicable, because it talks about the eternal principles. So "atta Shri Bhagavad Gita" or "Mahabharata" or whatever it is.
Okay. Okay, like "atta atta," right? You have "atato brahma jigyasa." Yeah, now we will inquire about the scene. There, in that, on the transcendental platform, now means you're focused on what's happening now. Because you can think of, I'm going to meet Krishna, but Krishna's always there. So technically still that's present. Now I met Krishna, it's in the past, but Krishna's still there. You know, so everything's there, but there's a feeling of future and past. But there isn't actually. But in the material world, basically, that's all you're dealing with. If you're not dealing in the present 1/11th of a second, you're in the future or in the past. You're not in the present. Like that. Yeah, good point, good point. Some other points. Okay. So then the relevance will be then, specifically, just like Bhagavatam is the book, right? That's our main literature. Right? If you ever... You won't generally get it anywhere else, but in India sometimes, you're speaking with scholars, they'll ask you, what's your book? Right? So for us, the book is Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? All the other books are in pursuance of that. Right? Bhagavad Gita is the beginning, you know, the foundation for it. Nectar of Devotion is explaining the devotional service that's going on in there. Chaitanya Charitamrita is then Lord Chaitanya showing how Agodia applies the Bhagavad philosophy, right? So all that's there, okay. So then with the Lilamrita, then that's explaining, showing how Srila Prabhupada would apply the Bhagavad philosophy and that in his life, in whatever situations he would be in. You know, so the situations we would call modern situations, but the lessons to be learned are eternal. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay, it's not that something changes, right? You know, Caesar in Rome dropped something, it somehow or another hit the ground. So it's not that it's the same thing doesn't apply now. We understand? It's not that we let go now and you know, it's like the ceiling's covered with all kinds of things that the kids, you know, somehow accidentally let go of, you know. That, course, if that was true, then we'd be all on the ceiling also, right? You know, like that, so. Okay, chapter 1. Is this the normal thickness? I always thought the first one was like this fat. How many volumes is this?
Six.
So maybe it's the original. Oh, maybe the fat one is when the reduced ones. Because Satsurupa Maharaj, he was asked by the GBC to write down the, to document Prabhupada's pastimes. So then he contacted basically whoever he could, any god brother, god sister that was there, and discussed with them about Srila Prabhupada. And then taking all that, he had, thousands of, recordings. Those are transcribed. Then from that, then he would study them. And then they would be categorized them, so they get, devotees who are in New York at this time when Prabhupada came, and those who were in L.A. at that time when Prabhupada was there, and whatever happened, any instructions, letters, anything. Then he put them together. And also it would bring out Prabhupada, his interaction with the devotees, interaction with anyone, and also just the development even of individual devotees. So it was very, very well done. And what's amazing is that it's like you're there, you're listening, you're seeing what's going on, but you don't see Satsurupa Maharaj.
Yeah.
Very, very special in the way he was doing that. You know, some are able to do that, some are not, but his is the most transparent of anything I've seen. And that went, and then at some point there was, after he finished, then I think he gave, when he finished he gave everybody's document back to them. And then at one point there was a fire, and it burnt the whole archive, like that. And so then it wasn't all there in one place. So then everybody has their little thing here and there. So it seemed to be, just an arrangement that then whatever there is here in these books. And then he had the little small books, and then now other devotees are reading. So this will be your main book, like Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, so many are there. But Chaitanya Charitamrita is our main book. Then you have Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Mangal, all like this. So this is our main book on Srila Prabhupada. Chapter 1, Childhood. Then a quote from Prabhupada. We would be sleeping, and father would be doing artik, ding, ding, ding. We would hear the bell and wake up and see him bowing down before Krishna. It was Janmashtami, the annual celebration of the advent of Lord Krishna, some 5,000 years before. Residents of Calcutta, mostly Bengalis and other Indians, but also many Muslims and even some British, were observing the festival day, moving here and there through the city streets to visit the temples of Lord Krishna. Devout Vaishnavas, fasting until midnight, chanted Hare Krishna and heard about the birth and activities of Lord Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam. They continued fasting, chanting, and worshipping throughout the night. The next, Prabhupada mentioned that before the partition, says everybody would go to Janmashtami and these big programs. The Muslims would go, everybody would go. But after, then they separated into their camps. But before that, there was hardly any difference between everybody. Everybody was just, they were all Indians, and when there was a big festival, then, the Vedic traditions were the central, and even if you're whatever religion you were, then everybody would kind of gather around that. The next day, September 1st, 1896, a little house in the Taliganj suburb of Calcutta. A male child was born. Since he was born on Nandotsava, the day Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, had observed a festival in honor of Krishna's birth, the boy's uncle called him Nandalal, but his father, Gormohan Day, and his mother, Rajani, named him Abhayacharan, one who is fearless, having taken shelter at Lord Krishna's lotus feet. In accordance with Bengali tradition, the mother had gone to the home of her parents for the delivery, and so it was on the that on the bank of the Adi Ganga, a few miles from his father's home, in a small two-room mud-walled house with a tiled roof. Underneath a jackfruit tree, Abhay Charana was born. A few days later, Abhay returned with his parents to their home at 151 Harrison Road. An astrologer did a horoscope for the child, and the family was made jubilant at the auspicious reading. The astrologer made a specific prediction. When this child reached the age of 70, he would cross the ocean and become a great exponent of religion and open 108 temples. Yes, so here we see in the tradition is that the childbirth generally is not in one's own home. Generally one goes to the mother's house, because previously people all lived there around together. They'd be at close by villages, so it's just going from one village to the next. At the mother's house, then one, the mother is, of course, naturally very good at these things, right? You know, you're the the example or the evidence, right? If you're still alive and you're having kids, that means then your mother had to have done something, right? So then there. Plus, it's a common situation. You know it. It's something from your childhood. Everybody there knows you. Everybody there is well wishing. So that's the common. The platform that one goes there. Sometimes before, and then after the birth, then they stay for 3 months, until the what is the samskar? Where you go out for the first time.
Nishkramana.
And then after Nishkramana, then they'll go back to their own house. So probably this 151 Harrison Road, like that. They went by. That's where right now is where the. Govinda Bhavan is like that. Sometimes we buy stuff from there.
At Brahma. Oh, that's 151.
Yeah, Brahma Rasayana is there. We get it from there and that. It was at that place, so that was, I think, his original house. The house that after he was married and that he lived out and raised his children, that's still there behind. If you go back there, there's a little gully, and right in the middle of the gully, there's this little two-story house. That was Prabhupada's house. I've never seen it, I only heard about it.
So he lived opposite the Govinda temple?
No, it's behind Govinda Bhavan. Is it back there?
Govinda Bhavan is on opposite.
No, it's behind Govinda Bhavan.
Okay.
And then he used to go to Radha Govinda on the corner there. It's basically opposite, but it's a little bit over. Like that. Because that whole area there, that was where the mullets, that was their place. You know, they owned Calcutta. So that was, if you look at it, it's the main street and then it had these side areas. But now it's a big, messy fruit market. But you can see from looking at it that before it was a very, very nice, like, plaza. Very nice plaza. Somehow or another, they've turned it into a fruit market. You have a lot of example of the more humble than a blade of grass there, because it's just full of hay. Like that. And if you ever go in there, don't let anything stick out that can be stolen, because they have, from what I can understand, hired pickpockets. The shop owners, they have hired pickpockets that go around and steal from the people and then bring it to the shop owner, like that.
And the pickpockets, they have high schools in Calcutta on
Really, high schools.
And one of the one of the exams is that on a watermelon, they put a cloth, wet cloth, and with the blade they have to cut the cloth, not touching the watermelon.
Wow.
In one go.
I see.
That's how expert they are.
Okay.
They can cut your pocket without you noticing anything.
Well, pretty good.
Fortunately, we don't have pockets.
Yeah, so we don't have pockets, but that doesn't mean things shouldn't hang out. So if they can do that with your pocket, let alone anything else. yeah, like that. Okay. Yeah, and then once the child is born, then astrological chart is done, like we see with Krishna, Garga Muni did, then he came and gave a reading. That's all part of the thing. So then here that Prabhupada, after he was 70, he would open 108 temples around the world. Abhay Charan Day was born into an India dominated by Victorian imperialism. Right? What's Victorian imperialism? Yes.
British.
Okay. Yes. One word summary. Yes. Yeah, Victorian would be Queen Victoria at that time, so it was a time whenever they were very careful about their morals and that, upstanding, dressing nicely, everything prim and proper, everything very correct, like that. But and imperialism means that another country is in charge of you, but it's not that they're just protecting you and you're living your culture, and they're just the protectors, and then they take tax. Imperialism generally means you go in there, take over the country, and apply your culture on it, right? Because you think that their culture is inferior. You understand the difference? The Vedic, the kings, they may be king of so many other kingdoms, but all the kingdoms, they live according to their own culture. They live their own culture, their own lifestyle, their own food, whatever it is. And they even have their own laws, if it's specific, as long as they're not opposed to the Vedic conclusion. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. But here, imperialism means you just go in and just change everything.
No, very expert.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was their thing. They had an excellent bureaucracy that made sense to them that they were able to manage. Of course, then when they left, and then the local tried to apply that same bureaucracy, it doesn't work with the same efficiency like that. Maybe a hundredth like that, maybe.
I wouldn't be surprised if they planned that at all.
Oh, could be. Yes. What does Prabhupada mean? Prabhu means master, right? And pada means, one's, feet. So Prabhupada means the master at whose feet all other masters sit. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So whatever great personalities are there, they're taking shelter of Prabhupada. So all the Prabhus are taking shelter of Prabhupada. Yeah, does that answer the question? Yes? Okay. Another question? No. No question? Sure. You have a question? No. You have a question? Ah, there it is. Like that. He must be a great realized soul because he always just smiles. Right?
Brahma Buddha.
Yes, Brahma Buddha. Calcutta was the capital of India, the seat of the viceroy, the Earl of Elgin and Kincardine, and the second city of the British Empire was the viceroy. Some guy named Roy that really has bad habits or something. Like that. Viceroy means you have in England the Queen. Right? And so she is actually in charge of India. But she herself personally doesn't sit here. So her manager, who manages India on her behalf, that's the viceroy. So he means he's the top manager in India. Right? So everyone has to answer to him. And then he answers to the queen. Does that make sense? So we had Queen Victoria was on the throne, and then the Earl of Elgin and Kincardine was the viceroy. Where is Kincardine? I don't know. You ever heard of Kincardine? Have you heard?
Sounds Scottish.
Ever heard of Elgin? Where is that? No, but you've heard of it. Well, we have Elgin Road in Calcutta. Right? that's the street that the forum is on. Everybody knows Elgin Road. So that must be after the Earl of Elgin. Like that. The second city of the British Empire, what was number one?
London.
London, yes. Like, despite that the bridge was falling down and all that, it didn't matter. Still, it was the main city, right? Because that's where they sat. So that means that Calcutta looked, it could have looked better, but still you're not going to say that it's better. Yeah, but whatever it is, it looked, very, very elegant, like London, right? And so it looked like that up until I think about the 60s. And then the Communist Party took control. And then it stopped looking like that. Sarvabhavana Prabhu said that when, because he grew up in Calcutta, that when he went to school in Germany. So when he left to go to school, they used to wash the streets of Calcutta with Ganga water twice a day. So in the morning and sometime in the day, they would wash the streets. So it was super clean, super elegant, very well organized. Everything was very, very nice. He said when he came back from Germany after his schooling, they had stopped and the place had turned into a dump. Like that. I was walking in Calcutta and some gentlemen, bump into them, they start a conversation. So naturally, they'll say, you're a foreigner, they'll say, what do you think of Calcutta? So naturally, it's nice, the people are nice, or, very pleasant, this and that. And then some, that's generally the conversation. So one time I said, well, what do you think of Calcutta? And he said, I think it's a dustbin. So he says, it's a garbage can. So, like that, so.
That's pretty far out, because it wasn't just like England and India, it was an empire. And out of the whole empire, then Calcutta was the
best. Yes, yeah, it was the best. It was like that. The sun never set on the British Empire. I think now it never rises, but hey, it's all going on, right? Okay. Europeans and Indians lived separately, although in business and education they intermingled. Yeah, you had what was called behind lines. There was an area of Calcutta, wherever the British lived, that the locals didn't go into there. Like that, unless they had some work. If they were like maids in someone's house, so they were fixing the plumbing or delivering something, then they could go. But they had to have passes and stuff like that. There'd be guards. So the behind lines where was it? Yeah, you had from Park Street up to Lower Circular Road. And from Chowringhee over to how Lower Circular spreads down. So that square, that was behind lines. That was the British area. Where the temple is now, the Calcutta Temple, that's in what was behind lines. The British lived mostly in central Calcutta, amidst their own theaters. Theater Road, right? Now Shakespeare, Sarani. Racetracks. You have down at the end the big racetrack there. Cricket fields. Like that, it's like you have, because it's a tropical climate, you have a lot of these little bugs that make all kinds of noise, so there's big fields of them. Like the Chinese, they have crickets as a pet, like this, and so then the British had fields of crickets like that. Right? Isn't that right? What do you think? Yes? No? So what does it mean? What's a cricket field? A field is where you play cricket. That means where you go out and you sit down and you poke the cricket and it hops like that or something.
Yeah, a bat and a ball.
Isn't that baseball?
Cricket's a game,
okay. Thank you. Very good. Very good. And fine European buildings. The Indians lived more in North Calcutta. Here the men dressed in dhotis and the women in saris, and while remaining loyal to the British crown, followed their traditional religion and culture. Abai's home at 151 Harrison Road was in the Indian section of North Calcutta. Abai's father, Gaur Mohan Day, was a cloth merchant of moderate income and belonging to the aristocratic Suvarnavanic merchant community. He was related, however, to the wealthy Mulluk family, which for hundreds of years had traded in gold and salt with the British. Yeah, means that they were all, you have your main family, and then naturally it just starts having branches just with time. So the days are part of the Moloch branch. Does that make sense?
Sorry, what was the Suvarna?
Suvarna Vanik. They're one group of merchants like that. Suvarna will be gold, so they deal in that. But also, yeah. Originally, the Moloks had been members of the Day family. Oh, but it's the other way around. A Gotra that traces back to the ancient sage Gotama, right? So Prabhupada would have been Gotama Gotra. And Gotama's wife was?
Anasuya.
Okay, so coming in the line there. But during the Mughal period of pre-British India, a Muslim ruler had confirmed the title Mulik, Lord, on a wealthy, influential branch of the Deys. So that means it was the other way around. The Deys were the main family. That would have been the Hindu name. And because somebody was very influential in that, they would bestow titles on them. Like Mulik was one, Bahadur was another, like that. And so different, Alna Rishi? Rishi Prabhu? Yeah, so his family, they were Bahadur. So his great-grandfather was given a title by the Mughals. Then, several generations later, a daughter of the Deys had married into the Mulik family, and the two families had remained close ever since. An entire block of properties on either side of Harrison Road belonged to Lokanath Mulik, and Gaur Mohan and his family lived in a few rooms of a three-story building within the Mulik properties. Across the street from the Deys' residence was a Radha Govinda temple, where for the past 150 years, the Muliks had maintained worship the deity of Radha and Krishna. Various shops on the Mulik properties provided income for the deity, and for the priests conducting the worship, every morning before breakfast, the Mulik family members would visit the temple to see the deity of Radha Govinda. They would offer cooked rice, kachoris, and vegetables on a large platter, and would then distribute the prasad to the deity's morning visitors from the neighborhood. And so we see here is that it wasn't specifically that they would just give money. They designated certain businesses that they would take care of the deities. Right? So they wanted to make it very, very set. Like before Kshatriyas, they wanted to take care of a particular Brahmin or temple. They would give that person or temple villages. So the tax from those villages would go then to the deity or to that Brahmin. So here then, business persons, since they don't have villages, so then they'll dedicate businesses like that. So it's not an uncommon, even now there's still that kind of practice goes on.
So it's not so good then if the central department or person takes away the temple's businesses.
You wouldn't expect the temple would take deity businesses like that. No, it wouldn't. And so then, yeah. That wouldn't be the way they would work. Right? Does that make sense? You take care of deities, you don't take away like that. Because it said, Shastras, you take away the land or encroach on the land of the deities, and it doesn't give a very good scenario. I forget what it is, but, some variety of not very... It's not a good birth. You might be out in the cricket field, let's say.
Not playing.
Yeah, and not playing the game. You're out there making noise, Yes.
That they dedicate the businesses, that ensures that the value of the money or whatever it will be in the future, it always remain or it will come up?
Yeah, you could say that. Because, if you give a donation, that's one thing. You always have to worry about it. But here they have a business, and they just give a business to the deities. So that, therefore, if it's run nicely, it'll naturally increase. Because otherwise, a fixed donation with time becomes less and less. But a business is increasing, so that means it'll become more.
It's like in Calcutta, you know, some 40-50 years ago, and they were renting apartments for 20 rupees a month, and it was made a law that unless the people then live themselves, you cannot turn them out. So and then still they pay 20 rupees a month, and their landlords cannot do anything. I think they're changing it now, but that was the law.
That was from the British made that law. Like that, they had the law, and they had squatters' rights and all these different things. There's like that. Is that you don't? Manu doesn't mention it. Yes. Do Brahmanas also give in charity? Yes, like that, because giving in charity is just one of the activities of someone who is cultured, right? You always give in charity. So what means giving in charity means that one is that you have, when you look at what you have, and if you have stuff that's extra that you don't need, then definitely you want to give that away, right? Because you have it, so generally it's good. So, but otherwise, then if you're not using it regularly, you see, okay, this is extra, then you should give it to people who need. In any case, one should designate that a certain amount is being given in charity anyway, right? You know how to properly give in charity. When you know, when people do special things, they do programs at your house, then you give in charity to the devotees, or they do yajnas, then you give charity, and these and that. And so it shouldn't be just, you know, it should be appropriate. Charity means that you're giving a gift that's appropriate for the person you're giving it to, and it's a, you know, appropriate means what is given and the amount given, right? So that would be judged according to the person who is doing that benefit, right? Someone who's more senior, more advanced, that you give a bigger donation. Someone who's less, you give a less donation, right? But you want to be very careful that you don't give something, you know, miserly, you know, it's like that. Otherwise, you don't take part in doing fancy things. But you still give in charity what you can, like that. Charity shouldn't be at the expense of the family. You know, in other words, you're giving so much away, but your family is suffering because they don't have enough. That's not proper charity. You won't get benefit from that. So it has to be that, you know, everything's working nicely. You're doing well, others are doing well, right? Does that make sense? Like that. It's also mentioned sometimes you get something, and then if you yourself, you know, it's you then immediately give it away or a portion, you get even more benefit than if you gave it away later. Does that make sense? Like a Brahmin, he's given by the king 10,000 cows. 10,000 is way more than what he requires. Maybe he requires 100 cows. So he immediately gives away, you know, 9,900 cows to other Brahmins. Right? And then he'll give a large amounts to each Brahmin, or I'll give it all to one Brahmin. He'll keep what he needs and give the rest away again. And this way, then the king's one donation that he got benefit for, it may, so many people will get benefit because they will also give a donation. So, something more? No? Yes? Yes.
Maharaj, can we get benefit for every donation the Brahmin does as well?
Can we get?
The king, for example, you just said that he gave the 10,000 cows to Brahmana. Does he get, the king still get benefit when the Brahmana gives the cows away?
Well, does the king still get benefit when the Brahmin gives the cows away? He won't get the same amount as when he's given them, because he gets full benefit. A king who protects Brahmins, he gets 1/6 of their good, their pious work. So they're doing yajnas, they're doing japa, they're doing that. He gets a sixth, like that. If he doesn't protect them, he doesn't get anything. Right? So generally, a king who's giving 10,000 cows is generally taking care. But that would mean specifically that there's a Brahmin that he himself personally sees to that he's taken care of. Then he gets 1/6 of his pious credits. Right? So that means that. Does that make sense? So sometimes kings, there'll be Brahmins who are unable to, you know, make arrangements for themselves and this and that. So the king will make sure that they're taken care of. So whatever spiritual benefit that Brahmin generates, the king will get a sixth. Right? Like that. Yes?
Sometimes the Buddhists think that because their occupation is just worshipping the Lord and being a devotee, that you don't have to give donations.
That they have to give donations. They don't have to give donations. Is that correct? That if you're worshiping the deity, you don't have to give donations? It wouldn't be correct because they're worshiping the deity because they're a Brahmin. And Brahmins give in charity. Right? Patana, patana, yajana, yajana. Dana, which means charity. Pratigraha, or receiving charity. So because they receive doesn't mean they don't give. They always give. I remember... it was described to me that in the Madhvas, acharyas, the Madhvas, then they have 8 acharyas, main seats, and they manage the mutts of the Madhva line. And so one of them is the Pejwar mutt. Then the Pejwar Swami, like that, he actually has a name, but he's always called Pejwar Swami, like, you know, like that, according to the mutt. And so then... when he goes and visits, he's a sannyasi, right? Head of the mutt, this and that, so many things. He then, when he goes to the temple and to take darshan of the deity, he'll always go, you know, there'll be some brahmacharis, but there'll be one brahmacharya that carries a box. He has this little box that he just holds in his hand. And when he goes around the temple, because then there's so many brahmins there, and they're grihasthas. Right, they do the puja, because in the Pancharatric system, generally it's always grihasthas that are doing like that. Though they may have brahmacharis and this and that, but generally it's, you know, grihasthas that do it. When he goes around in all the places where the Brahmins do something, you know, darshan or give you something or, you know, show the lamp or that, then he turns to the brahmachari and he takes money out of that box and gives it to him, whatever is the appropriate donation. You know what I'm saying? It's just whatever is the going donation, like that. Whatever everybody else, if the grihasthas are paying 10 rupees for that, he pays 10 rupees. He doesn't go, well, I'm a sannyasi, I don't have to pay anything. Right? So that's theirs. Brahman is always given charity, even if it's small. But they always, this idea that I don't give in charity, then that means the only ones that don't give in charity are Shudras. Like that. Means if they give in charity, that's good for them. But if they don't give in charity, they won't lose their position of being a Shudra. You can't do anything to not be a Shudra. Like that, right? But because that is your common man. You know what I'm saying? So you can't do something that you're not a common person. You know, a citizen of your state, like that. So this is then, but to be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, what distinguishes them, one of the elements, is charity. So if you don't give in charity, you're not a Brahmin by occupation. Like that. Does that make sense? It's very, very important.
Even you see more as the common man, or, you know, especially the ladies, they always, even the old poor, they have like 25 paisa they give.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's there.
In the temple, especially.
Yeah, no, it's there. I remember once in Calcutta, I was walking down the street, and this beggar latched on to me, you know, like that. And so I'm walking as fast as I can. I was going fast anyway, but keeping up, begging, this, that, harassing, and all this and that. And then I just stopped and said, hey, you're a beggar, you're a grihastha. I'm a brahmachari. Aren't you supposed to give charity to me? And the guy just, you know, stopped and just, you know, in a very... what's the mood, you know, where you feel bad that you did something wrong?
Guilty?
Hmm?
Guilty?
Yeah, guilty, ashamed. Like that, he just stopped, oh, yeah, excuse me. You know, and then he got out his little pouch like that and reached inside and looked around. And at that time, 2 paisa was the standard donation, you know. Like 5, you know, you were going to town. But, and he opened it up, you know, the little thing, pulled out 2 paisa, you know, and gave it to me very, very respectfully, you know. This and everything, and then left. Because he was thinking, you foreigner, so, you know, foreigner, money, like that. He didn't think, you know, you staff brahmachari, like that. So when he realized, oh, brahmachari, then immediately he was, so, even the beggar was giving donation.
That's something.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah. When, well, if one gives charity, you give charity, okay? If you give whatever you give, if you give it to a common person, or like you do welfare work for someone who's poor, needy, like this, whatever you give, the exact same amount you'll get back later, right? Either this life or generally it's next life, right? You'll get back exactly the same amount. If you give to someone who claims to be a Brahmin, but is not, just that the consideration he claims to be a Brahmin, so you're reciprocating with him like that as a Brahmin, you'll get back double what you've given. Right? So if you give 1 rupee, you'll get 10 rupees. Right? If the person actually is a practicing Brahmin, right, who, you know, studies the Shastras and does these things, does Brahminical activities, you give 1 rupee to him, you'll get back 10,000. Right? If they are someone who is very, very, realization in the Shastras, like that kind of level, they can, you know, make you advance in your understanding, you'll get, for 1 rupee, you'll get back 100,000 rupees. Right? And if there's someone who's transcendental, like Srila Prabhupada, it's unlimited. You can't count, you know, what comes back. Like that. Does that make sense? So charity is very, very important. Prabhupada said, Gita, Krishna is saying, austerity, sacrifice, and charity, these have to be done by everyone, even a self-realized soul. Right? Because if you look at it, austerity means you're performing your prescribed duties. Whatever is your position, you're performing that. Sacrifice means you're doing the work for someone else's benefit. Right? That's the work. So one is your position, your identity. The other is your activity. And then from in that position, performing your activities, right? Then you get a result. So now you give part of that result away in charity. Does that make sense? So your identity is connected to Krishna by performing your prescribed duties. Your activities are connected because what activities you're performing, you're doing that in the mood of detachment. And when the result comes, you're giving part of that in charity. Does that make sense? So these three, so the sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, that never is given up. So the sambandha, you see yourself in relation to Krishna performing your duties. Abhideya is that performance of those duties is then done with the right consciousness, that of naishkarmya, or detachment. You know, for Krishna's pleasure, that makes it sacrifice. Right? I'm doing it for Krishna, that makes it yajna. Right? And then when I get a result, I give you know, part of that to others who can, you know, benefit from it. Is that okay? There was something else? Yes.
Does charity mean only money, or
does charity mean only money? Money is just a form of wealth. It has to be it would be something that has some value, some use in someone's life, like that. Of course, then you could say the topmost charity is Krishna consciousness, right? If you can give Krishna consciousness, then that's the highest charity. And so, because one is doing that, that's the best. But that doesn't mean that one doesn't perform charity on the lower platforms. Because you can say, well, I'm preaching, so I only do that. I don't have to give other charity. That's okay if that's all you do. Like Haridas Thakur probably doesn't need to do any other kind of charity. Right? Because all he does is chant and preach. You know, if there's anybody who, oh, I chant Hare Krishna, I don't have to follow the rule, he's the one. You know, like that. Like that. Yeah, I think, you know, he may be the only one.
Interesting to note that Maharaj, he still follows all the religious...
Yeah, still he follows all the different things, and he considers, well, because I'm born in a Mohammedan family, then therefore he doesn't go into the temple. You know, these kind of things like that. So, in other words, one's spiritual activities and one's dealing with the material energy, those duties never change, no matter what your position is. What changes is your consciousness. Right? In other words, whether you're a neophyte, a madhyama, or uttama, externally the duties don't change. Right? What changes is the consciousness. Right? Because the idea is that the point is if the basis is relationship is expressed through activity. So if there's no activity, you stop activity because I'm spiritual, then where, how are the relationships expressed? Understand? And this idea that, because I do, I don't have to do this thing, I'm let off the hook, that comes from what?
Protestant,
that comes from there, and also then we see within the Vedic, impersonalism, right? Because the jnani thinks, I am doing spiritual activities, I don't have to follow karma. Right? Even though they'll follow social etiquette and things like that. But that's there, because they don't have the concept that relationship is the central feature. Their central feature is liberation. Right? But what they don't understand is liberation is actually gained through action. As Krishna then says, there's action in inaction, and inaction in action. So even though they do nothing, there's still action, the material energy is still working on them, because they claim to be transcendental, but they're not. And inaction in action means that you are performing an activity, but because it's for Krishna, it doesn't give any material result. Right? But the point is activity is going on. You're doing something like that. So that never stops. This idea that at some point I'll be finished with that. You know, I'll do something. I'll get out of the school, then I don't have to do all these things. No, you have to do a whole bunch of other things. You know, you have to show up at 6 o'clock here, go home at, you know, 6 o'clock in the evening, you know, on the schedule and everything. But then when you leave here, if you want to do service in a particular department or run a business or that, you're still going to have to follow a schedule. I remember the boys that used to be here a long time ago, right back in ancient history, like that, you know, they would grumble sometimes about getting up in the morning. Then, you know, after, you know, getting out and this and that, and, you know, by performing their, how you say, their prescribed duties, then naturally made it to America, and then, you know, set up on the West Coast there, you know, with their, I think it was a t-shirt business, you know, selling t-shirts and everything. And, you know, it's a tourist area. The tourists go out early in the morning. And so before that, they have to be ready, get their t-shirts ready, pack them, get them out on site. They have to get up at 4 in the morning. You know? So they said that, you know, now they're forced to get up. Well, before they didn't want to get up. So they were saying it was very funny because, it was, you know, just kind of the way it worked out. They were thinking, now, great, we're out. We can do whatever we want. You know, start a business, get our money, do whatever we want. No, they're there at 4 in the morning. You have to get very funny. Okay, so we'll end here for today. We'll continue tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Very good. So you got the mantra right there. So everybody was chanting Hare Krishna the same this way. You also forgot to mention, you also try to get the same note. You know, so we go up. That's why we say Om. We don't have to say Om to say Hare Krishna. It's not like other mantras. So we're saying the Om so that everybody gets the same note. You know, we go Om, so someone Om, Om. No, everybody Om. Yeah, you get it all together, right? So you start wherever you are, but then bring it to where the same, so we're all the same, okay? Yes. Thank you.